Hey, everybody. Welcome to Barca Talk. Brian Henderson here. Joining me from Madrid, Spain, is Gabriel Quiroga.
Brian, my Barca brother from another mother. How are we doing in Buffalo, New York?
We're doing cold and not cold, but rainy. It's rainy and disgusting out. How's it in Madrid?
Well, we're boiling hot. As you know, we're recording here. I got my guns out. You know,
You got the tank top rocking.
Yeah, it's going to be about 100 degrees today. So yeah, it's been summer has officially begun for sure.
Yeah, we're still waiting on it here in Buffalo, but it's going to really hit hard in July and August. I can tell right now. But the humidity is high, but the heat is low.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing here. I don't have air conditioning, so I've been telling you before. Got fans, lots of water, and just trying to stay cool, stay in the shade.
Yeah, just stay cool. So do you know what's going on with FC Barcelona right now?
I have been following them on Twitter.
What do they have to say on Twitter?
They do have a Twitter account that they keep quite current.
I'm sure.
It looks like that Arthur is actually going to be coming this summer as opposed to December, which I am super excited about, if this is true, Brian. If this is true.
Yeah, I saw that report. I saw one in Sport magazine, but the club haven't announced that as of yet. But yeah, there have been reports over the last few days that Barca and Gremio had actually reached a deal to bring in Arthur this summer rather than next January. So that is exciting. But here's the other sort of fallout topic that comes from that. His arrival would take one of only three non-EU spots in the squad, and our current non-EU players are Paulinho, Coutinho, and Yerry Mina. Coutinho is looking to get Portuguese citizenship through his wife, but I haven't seen any updates on that yet and don't know where that's going. So it looks like if that deal goes through, or even in January, the same problem arises, right? That's pretty much going to ice out Yerry Mina, right? Because, of course, we're not going to let Coutinho go anywhere. And Valverde seems to have a strong preference for Paulinho.
So I have a question for you. Is this non-EU roster spot, is this a FC Barcelona thing or is this a La Liga thing?
It's a La Liga thing.
Ah, okay. Isn't that kind of weird? You would think, who cares? Why does that have to be? I mean, I can understand back in the day when they were trying to promote more Spanish players and so forth, but this non-EU, I think it's, you know, soccer's global now. You know, you try to get the best players for your league. And this seems very, you know, I don't know, very trite, you know, with three spots. You know, they should definitely adapt that. I understand why, you know, they want to just have more Spanish players, you know, coming through the ranks. But I think, you know, you're not going to see a team like, for example, Eibar trying to get, you know, 16 different South American players. They're going to continue to get their players homegrown from Spain. So I think, obviously, Real Madrid and Spain are not going to go either the other way, too. They're not going to try to sign eight. You know what I'm saying? But just have it open. I mean, who cares if it's three or four? Who cares?
I don't care, I don't think. But then again, I don't know what it would look like if that regulation were lifted.
Yeah.
It would become a little bit strange. I mean, it could potentially happen that if they lift that, then you could have Real Madrid, Barcelona entirely manned by non-EU, not just non-Spanish players, but non-EU players. And I think that there is some weird kind of, you know, localism or nationalism going on with that. But then again, it's non-EU. So, you know, you've got Portuguese, French,
yeah,
whatever. They can all play at Barcelona. That's not a problem. So it's like, it's so continental. It's like colonialism in a weird way.
Yeah. But that's the thing is that I just don't see, for example, even Real Madrid or Barcelona just signing all these non-EU players. You know, all the best players, for the most part, are EU players, right? So that doesn't really affect them. I'm just saying it just gives one more spot. For example, with this Arthur issue, you don't have to worry about doing anything with Yerry Mina. You can still keep him. You don't have to, you know, try to have Coutinho find a Portuguese wife, you know, all this stuff. With well, you know, going, no, I know his wife is Portuguese. Yes, I know this, but I'm just saying, like, you have to go through these back channels to create this spot for Arthur. You know what I'm saying?
That's a very specific dating, online dating yeah, profile.
Exactly.
Hi, I'm Philippe. Looking for a European wife.
Yes, you could join me in Barcelona. Yeah, in a nice life, you know.
I have a very nice house.
I just need your EU visa, you know.
So,
yeah.
No, but I see your point entirely. There's I don't it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, especially like you're saying now with the, you know, the sort of the market being the way it is. But as you've mentioned many times, and as we've observed, you know, La Liga is not the most progressive league or entity.
I mean, so what's going to happen with this, right? So Yerry Mina comes for this, you know, he's been here for the last 6 months, and let's say if Coutinho's paperwork doesn't go through, then obviously Yerry Mina is the odd man out. And then what does he go? He gets loaned out, or does he get, you know, what happens to him? And for me, I would like to see him develop a little bit more with the FCB this summer, and also, you know, try to get some more playing time with this year under PK, the tutelage under PK, and so forth. But
Yeah, I
I don't
agree.
know. It's
We need to get. Here's what it is. We'll put Yerry Mina out on loan if they can't get Coutinho an EU citizenship. Meanwhile, that's a thing. We got to get Yerry Mina a nice European wife.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe we should put an ad out on our website, be like, looking for an EU wife for Yerry Mina to
Yeah,
stay,
exactly.
to become an EU citizen.
What if polygamy was legal in Europe? Then you could just have some woman who works for the club just
Correct.
marry all their non-EU players.
Correct. There you go. That's a good strategy. I was just thinking that. I was like, maybe like the secretary to the traveling secretary could marry Yerry Mina, and then there you go. That's just easy.
And they just
So.
all live in one big house together.
Correct. Reality show. Boom.
Oh,
Done.
man, Barca TV just stepped up its game.
Correct.
That. So yeah, we'll see what happens with that. I think probably my prediction, because that's it's important that we make predictions here. My prediction is that Coutinho is going to get his Portuguese citizenship worked out, and then Arthur will come in. Yerry Mina won't have to go anywhere. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I think, you know, obviously with Barcelona's ability to get things done, you know, in the back channels of the visa process and so forth, I think that's going to ultimately happen. And I totally agree with you. I think that Coutinho's paperwork is going to go through, Yerry Mina is going to stay, and then we'll be able to bring Arthur this summer. I think it's very vital that Arthur comes this summer just for, you know, just getting used to the atmosphere of the team, the training. Obviously, just it'll. He'll have a better season. He'll be able to add more if we have injuries. And also, if you want to play Copa del Rey earlier, we can use him as well.
Now, what do you know about Arthur? What does he bring to the table?
Creativity, you know, as a midfielder, he's able to also possess as well. I just think that he has a lot of potential as a center mid, right? So just someone that can really control the game. And I think if he comes in December, it's going to be asking him too much, right? But I think, you know, with his preseason, to get completely acclimated with his other teammates, I think it'll just be an easier transition. Like I said, Valverde could use him for Copa del Rey matches in October, and where he has no pressure on him, you know, and he can just really find his footing, and then hopefully get some more playing time when games actually matter.
Yeah, and I, you know, creativity is very important, especially to us. And I think also he's very good with crafts.
Is he really?
No, I don't know. I don't know.
I
But
He has
I'm
a
just
he
thinking
has
like
a
that creativity, you know, he's like very good with ceramics. He can.
Yeah, he has a killer Pinterest page.
Oh man, have you
Yeah.
seen Arthur's Pinterest page? It's off the hook. But yeah, that would be good. Now, speaking of other transfer news, this is on the women's side. Have you heard about this? Have you seen this?
No, when you wrote this up, I just was reading about it, so this is pretty crazy.
It's far out, man. The women are making some major moves, they've picked up two people already, Stephanie van der Graaf from Ajax, a defender, and one of Lieke Martin's country women. So we get that the Holland connection there. And Keira Hamraoui, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, from Lyon. She's a midfielder and winner of two Champions Leagues with Lyon. So that's good. But meanwhile, this is crazy. This is what blows my mind, is that there's been just a wholesale clearance on players going out. A lot of women who we've been talking about and covering this last year, Ruth, Laura Raffles, Olga Garcia, Lena Rodic, who actually never had any appearances since signing, so not so much of a surprise there. Andrea and Pearl Maroney, but Maroney was just on loan from Lyon, so we knew that that was going to happen. The end of the loan would come, and they just decided not to hold on to her, or maybe there was never even an idea of holding on to her. They're just, you know, giving her back to Leon. So it really looks like the women are making some major moves, looking to win the league, go further in the Champions League, maybe even win it, or both. Because this last year, they had a good season, but the only silverware they went away with was the Copa de la Reina in May, when they finally beat out Atletico at something.
This is crazy news for me, because when I was reading this, when you were posting this in our notes, we had talked to Michelle Taylor from the Barca Women Twitter page, and we were talking about, you know, the women's season, and she didn't really think that wholesale changes were going to come. She just didn't think that was the kind of the ethos for the Barca women. But here they have completely changed that, obviously upgrading the defense a little bit and also the midfield, and they still could make up some more moves. So this is very interesting to see. Obviously, they're not satisfied with the season. They want to do more. So that's really great. You know, I think the other thing that's going to bring better talent to this league is that the league has so many more games than any other league in Europe. So I think a lot of women are going to be attracted to that venue, that they'll be able to play more games. And it's just more mirroring the men's schedule pretty much with the game. So I think that's really going to bring more talent into the league. But again, like we talked about earlier this season, I thought they had to upgrade the midfield and also get a better defender. And they've already done that with these two signings. So we'll see what else happens. And again, the board is putting a message out there that they're gunning for the league and to go further in the Champions League as well.
Yeah, but with getting rid of that many players, I mean, again, one of them was on loan, so we sort of were expecting to not have Moroni on the squad, so they were probably prepared for that. Lena Rodic hadn't played. She signed, and then she just never played, so she was kind of just dead weight, I guess, on the squad list. But still, that's four or five players who were playing a lot this last year, and we've only signed two. So we're still going to, I think, see some more signings happening. So, of course, we're always drawn to the big transfer news for the first team, and, of course, the first team always takes most of our attention and everything, but it seems like there's a real serious shakeup on the women's side this year.
And then also, I think, you know, maybe they're going to also promote some of their players as well. Maybe that's what they're also doing, is, you know, especially with Raffles, you know, she's, you know, she retired, right? It wasn't so much that she was being pushed out, but the other three, you know, I can, you know, what, like you said, Lena Rodic didn't have any appearances, so that's just a non-existent player. So those are two players that we're not playing really this season. So obviously we're talking about Ruth and Olga Garcia, Andrea and Baroni. So like you said, four. I'm curious to see if they either do sign more players or if they're going to promote those players within to fill those gaps. But like I said, I like the signings. I like when you go with a good, strong defender and also with a midfielder. Obviously, the midfielder of Haromi's talent, you know, being on Lyon and having all that experience from Champions League is going to hopefully help the team. And maybe she's going to be the new captain and a leader of that team. She's quite a player. She's a tall player too. So I think that's going to give us a little bit more presence on the field a little bit, you know, just having someone with her experience and her resume of winning, I think is just going to talk about that and lead that through example through the rest of the players who maybe not have that experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And she'll be, again, like that experience, she'll be able to pass that on to others. Now we have a little bit of an announcement. This is related to our community projects and our FCB Camp Scholarship Fund. In case you don't know, together we and the Houston Peña raised over $1,000 this last spring to send two youth players, brothers in fact, to the FCB camp in Houston. And the camp starts this week. Check-in day is actually today, Sunday, when we're recording. By the time you hear this, they will be starting the camp. So Oscar and Christopher are no doubt excited, I think. I hope they have a great week of training with official Barcelona coaches. And of course, next year we're hoping to get more Peñas involved in this campaign again and raise even more to send as many young players as possible to FCB camps all over the country.
Yeah, this is really exciting. I know they're going to have a great time. I wish I could go, as I I wish I could have this experience of just playing 1 week in FCB camp. So I know no doubt they are excited, and I'm really happy we were able to pull this campaign off. And again, next year we're hoping to include more Peñas and, you know, send more players, and I think we'll be able to do that as well.
Totally. Now, you want to talk about some World Cup action?
Yes, let's talk World Cup, baby.
All right, I have a little thing before we really dive into the World Cup. You know, MLS is still happening. Like, they're playing MLS right now. So who do you think is watching MLS right now with the World Cup going on?
Well, there's two things. First of all, I hate the MLS. So let me get that out of the way, right? I hate the way they do this scheduling because they miss opportunities on this. And again, until they, as I always say, until they change the schedule to mirror the rest of the world as they're going from September to May, then MLS will be taken seriously around the world. But anyway, there are people who, especially like I have friends in Portland that go to the Timber games all the time. And so,
Big
you know,
fan base in Portland. The
yeah,
Timbers have a
because
lot
there's,
of good fans.
yeah, exactly. Because there's no other pro sports going on. There's no baseball or anything. So a lot of people
What about the
who,
Trailblazers, man?
yeah, but it's not basketball season.
Oh,
Yeah,
right.
so the people are looking for something to do outside. They go check out these matches, you know? And if your baseball team stinks and you want to go see and your MLS team's doing better, then they'll go see. So those are the people that are watching. And obviously they try to use the World Cup as a springboard for this, right? So people get excited for the World Cup, they watch and they're like, oh, by the way, watch the Timbers match this Saturday. And so they hopefully get more attendance that way. But again, I just don't like the MLS schedule. I think it's just, you know, how many players are missing right now from MLS teams because they're playing the World Cup.
19.
Exactly. And they're 19
Exactly
studs.
19.
19 studs, right? 19 of their best players of MLS are
They
playing in the World Cup, you know?
have to
So,
be.
exactly. And
Yeah.
so those are the things. Like until MLS changes that schedule, you know, to mirror the rest, I think MLS will be finally taken more serious because then only players will want to play because they're not going to miss, you know, game checks to play for the World Cup or World Cup qualifying. So anyway, that's my
Well, I
rant
think the
about MLS.
MLS is more concerned with competing with other major sports in the US. I think that's their main thing. And of course, they're cutting across various sports. Like you said, in Portland they have basketball, but they don't have baseball, right? So right now in the summer, sports fans in Portland have that. But you know, if you're in LA, for example, where now they're just sick with sports teams, right? They got two baseball teams, two basketball teams, and for the first time in a while, like the Clippers. Well, last I checked, the Clippers weren't terrible. You know, and now they've got two football teams back, and
Yeah,
then
three.
now they have three.
Yeah.
You
Yeah,
sound
three.
so disappointed. Yeah.
No, but
American football.
of course. But this is the
Oh,
thing
right,
is
'cause the
that,
Chargers.
yeah, exactly.
Oh
And
my.
so this is the thing is that, like MLS to attract, you know, stars from either Mexico or whatever, you know, from Europe, even that, no star player in their prime is ever going to go to MLS. Because MLS doesn't mirror the schedule because it's just a conflict of schedule for anything else. So that's, yeah, I understand their business plan at the beginning was to not compete with American football. I get that. But now it's already been 20 years plus. You have all these MLS based stadiums. So they're not these stadiums that are 80,000 plus. They're about 20 to 40. So they're very reasonable. And they have a good crowd and they have good, you know, backing now that they can switch over. I mean, you're going to have to compete with American football for about 5 months, but at the same time, that's just the way it is. And then the rest of the year, you're fine. But you have these gaps following Premier League, La Liga, and so forth. And eventually, if you can land those prime players when they're 25 coming to MLS, that's just going to make MLS even better.
Yeah, well, here's how I see it going down. Because right now, those 19 players who are in the World Cup this year, and of course, next World Cup, it might be a few more. Let's say the US gets back into the World Cup next time, it'll be a little bit higher. But even so, those 19 players, they constitute only 3% of all the MLS players there are. So let's say that the league gets better, they start getting higher quality players sort of more gradually from a more diverse selection of countries in the world, then if you start to see 15, 20, 25% of MLS players playing in the World Cup, of course they're going to go do that. And that does in fact benefit MLS to have those players in the World Cup on such a big stage and drawing more people in to watch MLS. And now I'm thinking in terms of 10, 15, 20 more years maybe. But if you get those numbers up to 15, 20, even 50% of your players are playing on the major international stage, you're going to have to change your schedule. But right
Yeah.
now, they have no,
Yeah, no,
I don't
I
see any
know.
motivation for them to do that.
I know. And, but also, just think about these players are going to come back from the World Cup and they're not going to play right away because they need a little bit of a break, right, from the travel and playing all these really intense matches. So, again, these players are going to be missing from MLS games for about a month and a half, close to 2 months, you know? And so that's, you know, that's part of the problem, too. I mean, I understand MLS is, you know, goal at the beginning was to develop slowly and all this stuff. But they're at a point now where they have to really start thinking about when they're going to change the schedule and also if they're going to start doing promotion or relegation.
Well, I don't see that happening either. They would really benefit from it, but they're not going to do it.
I know. And that's, I mean, again, those are the type of things to become a world league, you know?
Yeah.
These are some of the things that they have to really consider. And I know that it's a scary foresight, but you got, I mean, just think about all the things that happen around the world in other leagues with promotion and relegation, how tense that is, how good it is, you know, all these different things. I don't know. I just, MLS still has a long ways to go for me to even start following and watching it.
Sure. Absolutely. And another small thing is that most of those 19 players, or at least a fair portion of them, will probably be back sooner rather than later. A lot of the countries they're playing for will probably not make it out of the group stage. So there's as well.
Yeah, exactly.
But let's talk about some actual World Cup now. Since we last talked, we last recorded just before Brazil's first match against Switzerland. And so, for me, Coutinho was really shining this past week because now we've seen two Brazil matches since we last recorded. And in that Swiss match, you know, the Swiss managed a draw, but that shot from Coutinho, I mean, it was totally his shot. For us, it was nothing surprising. It was right from his spot. But, man, the way he curled that in was a killer.
Brian, I think I underrated Coutinho.
Really? Because you were pretty excited about him to begin with.
No, I am, but it's you know, when I talked to the guys at the Canary in Blue podcast, and they were really over the moon about Coutinho, and I was still kind of, I don't know, I wasn't as excited as they were. But now watching these two Brazil games kind of outside the bubble of Barcelona and seeing what he does, and especially with that goal, I think I really did underrate him, you know? And wow, I mean, he is having a really good campaign. Obviously scored the game winner against Costa Rica with a nice toe poke. This match against Costa Rica, Brazil, let's talk about that one. On paper, you know, Brazil should kill them, right? But again, these games are so intense. They've been building up to this, you know, planning for a month or so about the tactics, about how they're going to do it. And of course, Costa Rica was playing for the tie. They were very close to getting that tie. And, you know, Marcelo had a nice cross, was headed down, and Coutinho just came through the box and toe poked it. So he had that one. And again, the one against Switzerland, that screamer of a goal was just super nice. I mean, it's just like, that's, if you're playing FIFA, that's just like the setup, you know, the typical Coutinho goal. But that thing was such a screamer. It was so sick.
Yeah. And we've seen him try to take that shot at Barcelona. We've seen him score with that shot from Barcelona, because that position, it's actually, right from the corner of the box. And just sending it in. He was actually a little bit further outside on this one, I think. But just, again, the power and the placement behind it. And I guess I might have underrated him a little bit as well, because I didn't really see him as a goal-scoring threat. But now I'm really starting to see him as a scoring threat. And it's, for us Barcelona fans, it's really good to have that threat from outside the box, which we haven't really had in years that I can remember.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's true. And also, for someone to actually look for the goal, you know, I mean, I'm really excited for this campaign for him. You know, this season, he's going to be able to play Champions League as well for us. But if we're talking about Brazil as a team, what do you think about Neymar? I mean, it's, you know, as we said, like I said, Coutinho's underrated. And now I'm really kind of turning my opinion about Neymar more and more. Like after the Swiss game or after the Costa Rica game, he's crying, like, what? Like, and then, like, the antics he does, like, the dive. And I don't know, man. Like, just more and more, I'm starting to really sour on Neymar. I don't know. What about you?
Well, I was thinking about this. The thing about watching Neymar play for me is it's kind of like, it's sort of like when you are seeing, like, an ex of yours. Like, if I'm going somewhere and I see an ex-girlfriend of mine, it's like, I don't have anything against them, but it's just there's that weird sense of disconnection and yet connection at the same time. Like, we're, you know, we still broke up like not that long ago. It's still sort of fresh. But I think Neymar is still an incredible talent, but I am starting to really be a little bit more thankful that he left Barcelona, mainly because of his attitude, his public persona. He definitely has some really big ego things happening, and that's of course not uncommon with high level top tier footballers, you know, ego things come into a lot of it. But I feel like we are better off without him.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is like, he's crying after this game, and it's, first of all, it's against Costa Rica, and it's in group stage. So I don't understand the outpouring emotion of this match.
Well, now, I understand that. I can, you know.
You can understand why he was crying?
Yeah, because he just, that particular game was just, it was a really tough game for him. He was getting, you know, he's like the most fouled player in the world, and they were really coming at him hard. They were making everything really, really difficult for him. And, of course, I imagine that he knows that Brazil has the talent, and they have the skill, and they're the better team, and that they should win. And so he's probably thinking, like, why aren't we beating these guys? We should be beating these guys. But, you know, of course, he knows that it's because they're playing really physically, they're fouling really hard, and they're making everything really difficult for him. And, of course, you know, the referee is, you know, not giving him the calls he wants, whatever, right? But so it was just, it was a really hard game for him. And the fact that, okay, let me tell you a story. Because I see you shaking your head. Let me tell you a story. I once climbed a mountain, and Megan and I climbed this mountain together. It's not a particularly huge mountain. This was up in Tahoe, but I'm not a fit man. And we just thought, well, we're going to go on a nice hike. It'll be a nice day. And we started the hike. It was a little warm. I was wearing jeans. I was not well dressed. I wasn't well hydrated. I was not well fed. I was not ready for this hike. And instead of just a nice little hike, we climbed a mountain. And as we're escalating the mountain, I'm getting more and more tired. I'm in more and more pain gradually. Meanwhile, it's a beautiful place, right? The landscape is gorgeous. And Megan is trying to soak in the natural beauty. And she just is looking out on these vistas and these ponds and these, you know, outcroppings and things, and just saying like, oh, look at that. It's so beautiful. But I was incapable of appreciating it because I was in such pain and fatigue, and I was just hating life, right? We finally get to the top of the mountain. Now Megan and I things are a little bit tense, right? Because she's trying to have a nice hike up the mountain and enjoy the beauty, and I'm just naysaying the whole time. I'm just like, yeah, if you're into that sort of thing, trees, whatever. I was in so much pain. But we get to the top, and now I can finally relax, and there was a little an Olympic complex, because it was a place where they had a Winter Olympics once. So they go to a restaurant. So we go get some food, and I'm finally sitting down at the table, and I just physically could not control it. I started crying. I wasn't sad about anything. It was just my body was just reacting to this experience that I'd been through. And of course, this is not a fair comparison necessarily, because, you know, Neymar's a top level athlete. He can run for 90 minutes. He can play for 90 minutes. No problem. It's not an issue for him. He's a young guy. I'm not saying that the same thing happened, but I think there's some aspect of that to why he just broke down on the field after that game. It was just a really tough game for him, and he got through it, and they won.
I'm shaking my head.
I know you are. I see it.
Because the biggest difference between that and Neymar thing is, first of all, it's not as though Neymar's never been hacked before in a match.
Right.
Right?
He should be used to it at this point.
Yeah, he's totally used to it, okay? And he's played in so many big matches already. Okay, so that's where the difference of your climbing the mountain experience. Like, it would be different if you did this once every 6 months, ill-prepared every time, and then, you know, okay, then I would say this is a closer. But the fact that Neymar has played in Champions League final, he's played in a World Cup before. He played a World Cup in Brazil, in his home country, where the pressure was even more, right? So for me, I just don't understand why, you know, he was crying. Because the thing is, I understand if they beat Costa Rica and they had to beat Costa Rica, and then they advanced, I'm in.
Right.
I get it. You know, it's very emotional, very pressure packed. But again, they got the 1 point before. They beat Costa Rica. Yeah, he got hacked, but at the same time, come on. Like, you know, I mean, people were overreacting. I mean, not overreacting. We're reacting pretty strongly on social media, because it's just like, he's just over the top with this. You know, he can't, like, I don't know. Like you said, with the ex-girlfriend comparison, I get that. I think I agree with that a little bit better. But again, I mean, come on. Like, you should be able to withstand this. You're a top four player in the world. You are going to get hacked. This is what the scouting report is on you. You just got to withstand it. You are the mainstay of the Brazilian team. You know, you're one of the top players of the world. Like, this is going to happen. So for me, I think it's just too dramatic.
Gabriel, I think we need to get real for a second. Why does Neymar crying make you so uncomfortable?
It doesn't make me uncomfortable. I just can't stand this. I don't know. It's like drama, you know? I understand sports. It's tough. You put a lot of energy. You put all your emotion into it. I mean, I've played sports my whole life. I get it. But at the same time, there's moments when it deserves to be crying, and there's moments where, like, this group stage against Costa Rica where it's not life or death. You know, it doesn't, you know, merit a crying stand, you know? I mean, it was
I don't know. I mean, I think maybe the stakes were a little bit higher than you're giving it credit for. Not because of the opponent, but because of the situation, because they only had the 1 point from the previous match. They know that they really need to get 3 points from this match. So if they only get one from this match, then that puts them in a very bad position.
Yeah, but there was still one game. There's still one game left. So for me, it's not that, you know, and plus they got a point, right? So 2 points, three plus two, carry the one, divide by 5 points, you know? So they're, you, with 5 points, you usually should pass through. So again, I don't know. Anyway, let's talk about the Brazil performance. I think that they are a strong contender. I think they do have a good mix of the defense with the attacking. Obviously, they played two tough teams that put basically 12 people in the box. So I can't really say that their attacking is not that good. I mean, I'm more curious when it's the knockout round, when both teams have to play for something, right?
Yeah.
In these group stages, it's just, you just try to hold and get those points and try to move on. Like Costa Rica, the whole match was defending really well. Navas had a good game, but ultimately in that last minute, they had a mental lapse, and Brazil was able to counter on that, on those two mental lapses, and get 2 points or 3 points from that.
Yeah, but I agree with you that I think they are looking like a good contender, and that's fine. I guess I'm a little tired of Brazil winning World Cups, but you know, it's, but that's just the way of the world.
Yeah, but they haven't won anything since 2002, so it's not like they, you know, I don't know. I get what you're saying,
but since 66.
Yeah, but I mean, come on. I mean, that's, I mean, Brazil, you know, I understand what you're saying.
Uruguay,
right?
Like, has not won since the 40s.
Yes, this is true. I understand what you're saying, but I'm just, you know, it's not as though, I mean, they're just a perennially good team, right? So that's, you know, yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. And that actually would, I think, lead us nicely into talking about the really disgraceful showing of Argentina against Croatia. Because what the World Cup is so much about is about footballing nations, right? Of course, teams come and go, players come and go, and every 4 years, it's this really tricky thing. And of course, there are these other tournaments in the middle, but of course, the World Cup is the showpiece. That's the one that's right in the middle of everyone's excitement. And it has a lot to do with this, how you sort of try to build a narrative around your country as a footballing country. And right, and of course, we know that Argentina has this great lineage of creating great players. Not just Maradona, right, but a ton, and Messi, of course. But they've only won 2 World Cups, right, versus Brazil, who are the record holders with, what, 5, 6? You know, and that kind of idea. So that's why, of course, Brazil is looking really good this year. I think they are even looking better than they did when they were playing in their home country last time, which is nice. But then again, look at Argentina. We know that they're a great footballing nation, and yet this year, man, in this game against Croatia was an utter disgrace. Just so disappointing.
So I have a couple of things about this. It's interesting to me because, you know, when Brazil, the last World Cup, when they got, you know, embarrassed, right, against Germany, 7-1 on their own home field, right? A lot of people were writing this is the end of Brazil, that they didn't have the federation, they don't know what's going on. And look at the turnaround they've done, right? They got a manager who is a new manager, but also had the balls, for example, to take out David Luiz. I think that was the major kind of direction that coach had to make, right? Because David Luiz on paper has always been the sexy defender pick, but he didn't take him. He took Miranda and Thiago Silva. So right there, it's, you're sending a message that we're a different style. We're looking to defend well and be a better team. Argentina, from the top down, has been a mess for the last 8 years, right? So again, as we talked about in the last podcast, they needed a miracle hat trick from Messi just to qualify for the World Cup. And with Sampaoli, they decided, okay, we're going to put our future in this coach. Fine. He's a good coach. I understand that. But the problem is he has no – he's not good at – with the talent that he has, right? For example, in this Croatia match, who do you have on the bench? he had all the best players. You know, yeah. It's like, what? Like, for example, Dybala from Juventus. How is that guy not getting playing time?
I know. I'm shocked. I mean, he came in late in the game, but I don't understand why he's not playing Dybala, starting him. Right. On the other hand, I don't understand why Bilia kept getting caps. In this match, I was at least, I felt good that Bilia didn't get the cap, because I don't think Bilia is that great.
No, but also just, I don't understand why, for example, you brought Higuain, just play him. He had a good season for Juventus. Play him and have Messi be the playmaker. You know, have two strikers up there with Aguero, Higuain, Messi. Boom, you have three guys. Now all of a sudden the defense has to worry about a lot of stuff that's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
And I've been seeing a lot, especially on my favorite podcast, ESPN FC, they were talking about the Messi personality of this. And this is, I have to agree with them. This is where I kind of wish, especially like in these last two matches, he had more of the personality of Ronaldo, where that he was fucking pissed,
right?
Like, starts yelling at people, because you can only internalize so much before you explode, right? Serenity now,
right.
And it's just and in this match, right, he just looks so broken and just so out of it and so forth. And for me, it's almost at the point where I think this is going to be his last World Cup. He should just get pissed and just get angry, you know, because he's done so much. He's carried this team, and Sampaoli has failed him with the lineup, the tactics, and so forth. And again, like you said, this match was a disgrace. They looked like a pickup squad, like you have written here. They totally look like they just went around here in Russia and they said, are you Argentinian? Yeah. Put on number 8. We're going to need you to play against Croatia tonight.
Yeah, like they were just walking around the Buenos Aires airport, said, here, have a ticket to Russia. You're playing tomorrow. Go.
Exactly. And they've had no cohesion. They just look as though they've never played, or they don't know each other at all. You know, they don't even seem they had a training camp. And of course, they had a huge mutiny after the game, right? Did you hear about all this?
Oh, no, I did not hear about this. What's up with that?
Okay, so basically, Sampaoli is signed till 2022, okay? Because they said, we're going to ride or die with you. This is a project. You are our coach. But of course, in the first two matches, he's lost the whole, he's lost the whole team in the whole World Cup, essentially. Basically, our favorite player, Mascherano, led this mutiny, essentially.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he led it, and he was just, you know, fed up with the whole situation, with not seeing Higuain and Dybala, most likely, you know, not getting starts, and also just with the tactics and so forth, that the AFA had to come down, the president, and try to figure out if they were going to keep him or not. But guess what? Sampaoli has a buyout clause of more than $10
million. Whoa.
Exactly. So,
if they want to get rid of him prior to 2022, correct, the AFA has to pay him $10 million,
correct?
Something
more, I think. Yeah, I think it's something astronomical. So, which to me is, you know, lunacy, because how do you have such a high escalating clause? Because, you know, with these national teams, you only have so many games to perform. You know, that's why it's so difficult in the World Cup. I mean, we've seen Germany, you know, this World Cup not doing too well, and you only have 2 or 3 games to show something. And if you just have a bad run, bad luck, you're out as coach. So why have such a high clause, you know? And so now they're keeping Sampaoli. But what I just read before we were recording, Mascherano and Messi are picking the lineup.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Is that crazy or
that
what?
That is crazy. Yeah. Speaking of footballing nations, right? I don't know. I like it in a way, but it is definitely a kind of crazy and ballsy approach.
But they're keeping him as a coach, as a puppet there. Well, I mean, because they can't fire him. So right. It's just, of course, it's just, you know, South American chaos at its finest. You know,
yes.
It's just, you know, the AFA has no real direction. I mean, in theory, it was a good idea to keep a national coach for that long. But you can't have a buyout clause that high where it's going to bankrupt the whole federation if you fire the coach.
Right. You have to have contingencies in place so that, you know, best efforts aside and, you know, best intentions aside, you have to have a way out. You need a back door.
Exactly.
And it can't be a $10 million back door or
currency. And honestly, Brian, I can't remember the last time where I was impressed with Argentina's team play. Maybe back in 2006 or something like this, when they were playing and Messi was young and they had, you know, a quite good team with a good midfield. But, you know, really, everyone just has the vision of Argentina playing really nice, brand of football and being really good, but they really haven't done anything. I mean, obviously they've gone to the Copa del America finals and stuff, but again, they should have been able to win one of those and they haven't. And man, I'm just really disappointed with the whole team as a whole. And obviously I just, you know, in this kind of situation, I want Messi to grab this and do something, to be a leader and to really show emotion that everyone is feeling for him, you know, and he's kind of doing the opposite. And so, and what's even making it worse is Ronaldo's scoring goals, right? Yeah. And Ronaldo, quote unquote, has a quote worse team, you know, and it's just, you know, come on. I mean, Argentina and São Paulo have really let him Messi down for this World Cup, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I skipped over for a second Spain versus Iran, but let's talk about Spain-Iran and Group B in general. I thought it was a pretty good game.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good game. But again, this kind of goes into the Fernando Hierro not having the experience, right? He totally changed the formation. I have 4-1-4-1. You know, it's kind of
again, my FIFA app was calling it a 4-2-3-1, and I don't think they really played it that way. They were saying that Iniesta was going to be like a holding midfielder or a defensive midfielder, and they didn't play like that at all.
Yeah, I mean, again, they had close to 80% possession. But again, for me, it's Diego Costa. Like, I know he scored another goal and it was like a ricochet type of goal. But again, I just think he's always in the way. You know, that's just the way it seems to me. And I want to see, especially now that they've, you know, I don't know. I just want to see them start with Rodrigo or Aspas and see if there's any more fluidity with that, because it always just seems, you know, Spain has good buildup, you know, and then in that last thing, it's like Diego Costa, that they don't know if they want to give him a head ball or play at his feet. And in that indecision just kind of screws up the flow of attacking. And again, I don't think Diego Costa is really that great of a header, even though he's a tall guy. Like, he doesn't really score a lot of head goals, and he doesn't really have the footwork like Rodrigo Aspas. So again, I understand maybe against Portugal, where you need more physicality. Against Iran, I would have loved to have seen Rodrigo. I think he would have been a much better fit with the midfield and getting more scoring opportunities.
I know. And every time Diego Costa starts, I'm a little bit disappointed, but not surprised, because at this point, it's become a really predictable pattern that Costa will get the start. And every time I'm just like, it's like having the thing up top, you know, from the Fantastic Four. He's just like a man made of stone. He just moves so slowly, and he's got power, but he's got no finesse. And again, I like the finesse. Now, here's another thing, because in the pregame, I want to ask you about this because of your place of habitation. In the pregame here on Fox, they were talking about the selection of De Gea in goal. And of course, he made that mistake in the first match and it cost them a goal. And so they were saying, like, they were talking for about 5 minutes or so about, was it a good idea to start De Gea? Is this okay? But I think it was something of a manufactured debate, really. But they were saying that it was the Spanish media that got that conversation started. Is that what you were hearing in Spain?
No. Oh. I mean, they were just questioning about De Gea's, you know, ability in that match. But for me, De Gea is the number one.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you got to ride or die with him, right? You can't just make a switch to Kepa, because then De Gea is never going to be able to come back from that,
right?
You know? So again, he had a shutout. Obviously there was a goal that was ruled out thanks to VAR, but you know, I think he had an overall good performance, and De Gea is the number one. So you ride it. I mean, goalies are going to make mistakes. Oh, that was the other thing I wanted to talk about before we go into the Spain. The Argentinian goalkeeper.
Oh, Caballero.
That made that mistake. Oh, my gosh, dude.
That was the worst.
When I was watching that, I was like, is this guy serious?
Yeah.
And oh, my God. Okay, anyway, like, that just was the downfall of that match, right? Croatia just toyed with it.
Yeah, that was like the fuse. Anyway, once that was lit, Argentina was just gone. There was cohesion anymore.
Exactly. And Croatia was like, thanks for that gift. We appreciate it. But yeah, I mean, I definitely think, for example, I think maybe the Barcelona papers were talking about that, just bringing up a point of debate. But for me, there's no question De Gea is the goalkeeper for the Spanish national team going forward. And, you know, yeah, he had that one mistake, but again, he had a shutout, and he'll probably just bounce back from that. He's been a top tier goalkeeper for so long. Obviously, he's going to have a bad game like that, but he just shrugged it off and had a good game. So going forward, I think he's going to be confident with it, and he shouldn't have any mistakes like that again in this tournament.
Right. Now, as far as Spain's scoring capability, right, That goal from Nacho in that first match, I thought, was one of the top goals of the tournament so far for me, along with Tony Cruz's free kick in Germany's last match. That thing just blew my mind, honestly. But aside from that, I don't see Spain scoring a whole lot off of set plays. And what's interesting is how many goals have come off of set plays in this tournament and how important it is, I think, to have some good set play training. So without that really like sitting in Spain's arsenal, because they like to play the ball, they like to score on the run of play. But again, these tournaments, these knockout style tournaments, stakes are high. It always favors a team to play more defensively, especially a team with a little less talent, right? But so that means that set plays give you an opportunity, if you're really good at them, to get an edge. But I don't see Spain with that.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, just look at the short corner kicks that they do, you know? It's kind of that thing that they rather have the possession to have a better play. But again, there is something to better, like you said, set plays. Like we were watching the England match before we recorded, and they had I was telling you, that on the third goal, I believe, they had a really sick set play develop where they kind of just, they were one step ahead of the defender and they were able to get a goal from that. And, for me, with these national teams, because the chemistry can be off, right? I mean, we've seen, you can see a couple times, I was watching the Germany match last night where Tony Cruz had a bad pass because he thought the guy was going to do something and he didn't, right? Because that just comes with playing time with your teammates. That set plays are something that you can always practice as a national team and really have them developed and try to get scoring opportunities. And like you said, we've been seeing more of those. What have you been thinking about the VAR in this tournament?
So far, I'm pretty happy with it. I feel bad for the linesmen, because basically their main job is to help with offside calls. That's most of what they do. And the VAR system has essentially taken them out of that debate.
Kind of. I mean, I've been really impressed with the efficiency of the plays that they've been able to call, especially with the penalties, right? You've been seeing now the penalties have been more stronger calls. There really hasn't been any kind of debate about it. And I like the fact that, when the referee, I don't remember what match I was watching. The referee just looked at it barely 5 seconds, saw the handball, went right to the spot. So again, not really wasting time, just confirming what they saw. So I like it so far. I think they've been doing a really good job. But, like you said, with the offsides thing, there hasn't been many things with the offsides. It's been more about the penalty kicks being used for VAR than the offsides. So I still think the linesman is going to be still valuable. But again, the World Cup just showing, again, technology at its forefront, right? Using goal line technology and VAR together, just seeing, because really, that, I mean, people have complained, oh, it's going to slow the game down.
That was my concern. It hasn't been. But it hasn't. They've really worked a system so that, because there's a room full of officials, they got the VAR room, which I think is funny because it kind of looks like war room. But they've got the VAR room. Yeah. They've got the officials watching all the angles all the time. So there's it's not like they're just out, hanging out, having coffee and donuts, and then when there's a controversial call, they call them up. And then they're like, oh, yeah, where was that? Let me just pull that up. Oh, yeah.
Because the VAR room, right, they are able to look at angles before they buzz down. And so I think that really eliminates any time lost, right? Because they're able to see if it's really a call that should be reviewed. And if it's reviewed, they buzz down and then he goes to look really quick and he's been able to do that very efficiently. So I've been very impressed. I thought for sure they were going to have some technical difficulties or just, whatever, but it's been very smooth, so far. So we'll see.
Yeah, I'm really happy with how it has not affected the flow or the pace of the game. And I like how it's really helped with making good penalty calls. The only thing is I feel like the whole system might actually make lines referees into an obsolete thing, but that's fine. But we'll see, how it happens. I'm not totally clear on all the rules as to when they can defer to the VAR room, when they can't, because apparently there are calls where they can't defer to them. I don't know. It's not totally clear to me. But yeah, overall, I like it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, just having more confirmation on penalties, I think, is a huge thing, because then there's no doubt, right? There's less talking points about shoulda, woulda, coulda. I think you know, to be able to review and call those plays, especially I think I saw yesterday against the Korea-Mexico match, there was a handball in the box and you could clearly see the hand right there. He went to the VAR, called it, and then done. And it was, there's no debate, you know, because they show the replay in the stadium, the player sees it, can't hide from it. So
yeah. Yeah. No, I like it. I did hear a couple of commentators saying that there were calls that should have gone, that were in fact made or confirmed via the VAR, that were still wrong. And of course, those, they were talking about plays in other games that I wasn't even watching. And my, I just feel like, come on, man, you're just interpreting the rules wrong, or, you know, like you're, there's no way. But I haven't heard of any real controversies yet, which is good.
Yeah, and that's the thing it's trying to eliminate, is the, you know, shoulda, woulda, coulda, if that call was called, how is the game going to be, you know, in the future and so forth. So I think so far they've been doing a good job. And just to confirm right now, England just beat Panama 6-1.
Woo. Well, at least Panama got one. Good for them.
But really... but really good showing for England. I've been really impressed, especially in this match. They got a good young team, and I think they're going to go pretty far this tournament.
Yeah, I think they're going to go farther than they've gone in a while. All right, final thing. I was watching the Germany-Sweden match, and I was starting to notice that is there a holder's curse happening here, right? Because they were not looking great. They got down a goal. Then they lost a player. They went down a man when Boateng got ejected. And then they got one back. And it really looked like it would end in a draw. But then again, like in extra time, that Toni Kroos free kick would be in contention for goal of the tournament, I think. And they managed to pull out the win. And the commentary, of course, from one of my favorite commentators, Alexi Lalas, was that Germany are on fire. And I'm like, well, you know, take it easy. They kept their heads about them. They upped the tempo. Love made a really good substitution in taking off a defender. So he already lost one defender through red card, and then he took another one off to put on an attacking midfielder. They raised the tempo. They got the foul, and Kroos took an amazing shot, but that so easily could have gone the other way. But anyway, I was thinking about how there was this kind of a specter of the holder's curse, and I checked it out. The last four World Cups, the holders have not done well. So in 2014, of course, I remember very painfully how Spain went out in the group stage. 2010, Italy were the holders. They went out in the group stage. 2006, Brazil were the holders. They went out in the quarterfinals, which is not that strange. But then also in 2002, France were the holders, and they went out in the group stage. So we've seen, first of all, an upset from Mexico over Germany, which was amazing. And apparently the story was that Mexico was so excited that it registered on the seismic scale. It registered as a small earthquake when the entire country was jumping up and down, which I do not doubt. And even with these 3 points, I think they're still looking a little shaky.
I think there's something to it, but I just think it's more about the cycle of it, you know, that it's 8 years, right? And so you're with essentially most of these teams had the same team, because they usually don't lose that many players, you know, from that World Cup winning team. You just kind of interject a couple of players here and there. Most of them usually have the same coach, you know, like for Germany, for example, Spain, for example. I'm not sure about Italy at that time, but you know, you kind of have the same voice. And when I was watching the Germany match yesterday, the whole time I was thinking, man, the players looked as though they've been tuning out Yoki Low for some time now. They just, you see him gesturing and so forth, and nothing's happening, yeah. You know? And some of the moves he makes, okay, sure. But man, Toni Kroos saved their ass yesterday. I mean, that goal was obviously a golazo, but Sweden, what are you doing fouling there? I mean, it's just, I just can't get over it. Cause I like to see upsets, you know, sure. I like to see, like, I don't have, you know, vested in Germany at all. I just like seeing Sweden kind of get that point from there. But again, Mexico pulling this upset against Germany was such a great game as well to watch. It was wide open, good counterattacking. I also read that the coach had been preparing for that match for 4 months.
Oh, wow.
Planning the tactics and so forth. And you could see. But again, I think there is something to it. I just think more than anything, it's, you know, if the coach has been there for 2 World Cups, it's too long. Like, you're just listening to the same voice, you know, because you're also talking about with these European teams, the European Championship inside of that as well.
Right.
So basically it's 3 tournaments, you know, and there's a lot of pressure, you know, you don't really, you know, you have the pressure from the country and, you know, you want to do well. And So I think there is something to it. I don't think Germany's going to go very far this year. They just don't look like they have the talent as they did back in 2014.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how Sweden deals with Mexico and vice versa, because Mexico, they got that upset over Germany, sure. They beat South Korea, of course. But Sweden, I think that could actually be an interesting match. We'll see what happens there. But I do think that Germany's going to end the group stage with 7 points, and they will go forward.
Yeah, definitely. And
but I don't think they're going to go very far.
Like, yeah, I don't think they're going to go very far, especially their defense looks ragtag. So, but Brian, you know, we're forgetting a major news item before we close the podcast.
What is that?
Today marks June 24th, Leo Messi's birthday.
Yay!
So, feliz cumpleaños.
Feliz cumpleaños, Leo.
Yeah, so we can't, you know, forget to wish him a happy birthday, the GOAT. So hopefully he can pull something out of his ass against Nigeria and do something epic, but it doesn't look like it's going to be in the stars for Argentina this World Cup.
Well, I mean, like, looking at their group prospects, I am curious to see how they play in the next match against Nigeria. I think overall they have more skill, but Nigeria has a lot of speed and they could probably just run them down.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we're going to see what lineup the training team of Mascherano and Messi pick for this match. So maybe they might spark the team with their mutiny / new lineup. You know, obviously I bet you Dybala and Higuain are going to start. I hope so.
Just
go all guns blazing, you know?
Yeah, just come out firing.
Yeah. So one more week of group stages and curious to see what's going to happen.
My bracket's already completely screwed up thanks to Mexico.
Man, Mexico, they're the dark horse, man. They look pretty strong, you know? So there's some good teams. Again, I love when it starts the knockout round because that's when it gets really tense. And obviously, we have to have a winner. So I love those matches. But the matches so far have been really good. So there's only been like maybe one boring game for me. And other than that, they've been all really entertaining.
Barca Talk is written by Gabriel Quiroga and myself, Brian Henderson. Editing and music is by Brian Henderson. Social media management by Gabriel Quiroga. Tell a friend about us and become a supporter of the show. Just kick in a few bucks a month at our website, barcatalk.net. Until next time, Visca Barca.